We now turn from the principal Arab source on the conversion, Masudi and his compilers, to the principal Jewish source. This is the so-called Khazar correspondence, an exchange of letters in Hebrew between Hasdai ibn Shaprut, the Jewish chief minister of the Caliph of Cordoba, and Joseph, king of the Khazars, or rather, between their respective scribes. The authenticity of the correspondence has been the subject of controversy, but is now generally accepted with due allowance made for the vagaries of later copyists. The exchange of letters apparently took place after 954 and before 961, that is, roughly at the time when Masudi wrote. To appreciate its significance, a word must be said about the personality of Hasdai ibn Shaprut, perhaps the most brilliant figure in the Golden Age, 900 to 1200 AD, of the Jews in Spain. In 929, Abd al-Rahman III, a member of the Umayyad dynasty, succeeded in unifying the Moorish possessions in the southern and central parts of the Iberian Peninsula under his rule, and founded the Western Caliphate. His capital, Cordoba, became the glory of Arab Spain and a focal center of European culture with a library of 400,000 cataloged volumes. Hasdai, born 910 in Cordoba into a distinguished Jewish family, first attracted the caliph's attention as a medical practitioner, with some remarkable cures to his credit. Abd al-Rahman appointed him his court physician, and trusted his judgment so completely that Hasdai was called upon first to put the state finances in order, then to act as foreign minister and diplomatic troubleshooter in the new caliphate's complex dealings with Byzantium, the German Emperor Otto, with Castile, Navarra, Aragon, and other Christian kingdoms in the north of Spain. Hasdai was a true uomo universale, centuries before the Renaissance, who, in between affairs of state, still found the time to translate medical books into Arabic, to correspond with the learned rabbis of Baghdad, and to act as a Maecenas for Hebrew grammarians and poets. He obviously was an enlightened yet a devoted Jew, who used his diplomatic contacts to gather information about the Jewish communities dispersed in various parts of the world, and to intervene on their behalf whenever possible. He was particularly concerned about the persecution of Jews in the Byzantine Empire under Romanus. Fortunately, he wielded considerable influence at the Byzantine court, which was vitally interested in procuring the benevolent neutrality of Cordoba during the Byzantine campaigns against the Muslims of the East. Hasdai, who was conducting the negotiations, used this opportunity to intercede on behalf of Byzantine Jewry, apparently with success. According to his own account, Hasdai first heard of the existence of an independent Jewish kingdom from some merchant traders from Khorasan in Persia, but he doubted the truth of their story. Later, he questioned the members of a Byzantine diplomatic mission to Cordoba, and they confirmed the merchant's account, contributing a considerable amount of factual detail about the Khazar kingdom, including the name, Joseph, of its present king. Thereupon, Hasdai decided to send couriers with a letter to King Joseph. The letter, which will be discussed in more detail later on, contains a list of questions about the Khazar state, its people, method of government, armed forces, and so on, including an inquiry to which of the 12 tribes Joseph belonged. This seems to indicate that Hasdai thought the Jewish Khazars to hail from Palestine, as the Spanish Jews did, and perhaps even to represent one of the lost tribes. Joseph, not being of Jewish descent, belonged, of course, to none of the tribes. In his reply to Hasdai, he provides, as we shall see, a genealogy of a different kind, but his main concern is to give Hasdai a detailed, if legendary, account of the conversion, which took place 2 centuries earlier, and the circumstances that led to it. Joseph's narrative starts with a eulogy of his ancestor, King Bulan, a great conqueror and a wise man who drove out the sorcerers and idolaters from his land. Subsequently, an angel appeared to King Bulan in his dreams, exhorting him to worship the only true God, and promising that in exchange he would bless and multiply Bulan's offspring, and deliver his enemies into his hands, and make his kingdom last to the end of the world. This, of course, is inspired by the story of the covenant in Genesis, and it implies that the Khazars, too, claimed the status of a chosen race, who made their own covenant with the Lord, even though they were not descended from Abraham's seed. But at this point, Joseph's story takes an unexpected turn. King Bulan is quite willing to serve the Almighty, but he raises a difficulty. Quote, "Thou knowest, my Lord, the secret thoughts of my heart, and thou hast searched my kidneys to confirm that my trust is in thee. But the people over which I rule have a pagan mind, and I do not know whether they will believe me. If I have found favor and mercy in thine eyes, then I beseech thee to appear also to their great prince, to make him support me." The Eternal One granted Bulan's request. He appeared to this prince in a dream, and when he arose in the morning, he came to the king and made it known to him. End quote. There is nothing in Genesis, nor in the Arab accounts of the conversion, about a great prince whose consent has to be obtained. It is an unmistakable reference to the Khazar double kingship. The great prince, apparently, is the Bek. But it is not impossible that the king was the Bek, and the prince the Khan. Moreover, according to Arab and Armenian sources, the leader of the Khazar army, which invaded Transcaucasia in 731, that is, a few years before the presumed date of the conversion, was called Bulkhan. Joseph's letter continues by relating how the angel appeared once more to the dreaming king and bade him to build a place of worship in which the Lord may dwell, for the sky and the skies above the sky are not large enough to hold me. King Bulan replies bashfully that he does not possess the gold and silver required for such an enterprise, although it is my duty and desire to carry it out. The angel reassures him. All Bulan has to do is to lead his armies into Dariela and Ardabil in Armenia, where a treasure of silver and a treasure of gold are awaiting him. This fits in with Bulan's or Bulkhan's raid preceding the conversion, and also with Arab sources according to which the Khazars at one time controlled silver and gold mines in the Caucasus. Bulan does as the angel told him, returns victoriously with the loot, and builds a holy tabernacle equipped with a sacred coffer, the Ark of the Covenant, a candelabrum, an altar, and holy implements which have been preserved to this day and are still in my, King Joseph's, possession. Joseph's letter, written in the second half of the 10th century, more than 200 years after the events it purports to describe, is obviously a mixture of fact and legend. His description of the scant furnishings of the place of worship and the paucity of the preserved relics is in marked contrast to the account he gives in other parts of the letter of the present prosperity of his country. The days of his ancestor Bulan appear to him as remote antiquity, when the poor but virtuous king did not even have the money to construct the holy tabernacle, which was, after all, only a tent. However, Joseph's letter up to this point is merely the prelude to the real drama of the conversion, which he now proceeds to relate. Apparently, Bulan's renunciation of idolatry in favor of the only true God was only the first step, which still left the choice open between the three monotheistic creeds. At least, this is what the continuation of Joseph's letter seems to imply. Quote, "After these feats of arms, the invasion of Armenia, King Bulan's fame spread to all countries. The king of Edom, Byzantium, and the king of the Ishmaelim, the Muslims, heard the news and sent to him envoys with precious gifts and money and learned men to convert him to their beliefs. But the king was wise and sent for a Jew with much knowledge and acumen and put all three together to discuss their doctrines." End quote. So we have another Brains Trust, or roundtable conference, just as in Masudi, with the difference that the Muslim has not been poisoned beforehand. But the pattern of the argument is much the same. After long and futile discussions, the king adjourns the meeting for 3 days, during which the disputants are left to cool their heels in their respective tents. Then he reverts to a stratagem. He convokes the disputants separately. He asks the Christian which of the other two religions is nearer the truth, and the Christian answers, the Jews. He confronts the Muslim with the same question and gets the same reply. Neutralism has once more carried the day.